Funding for Think comes from SMU's Continuing and Professional Education, presenting Secrets from the White House.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How has Dallas built its image of itself as an arts city? And what else needs to happen in the downtown arts district to fulfill Dallas's goals of engaging and uniting artists and art patrons? The vibrant 68-acre complex that includes the Dallas Museum of Art, Meyerson Symphony Center, Winspear Opera House, and the just-opened City Performance Hall is now the largest of its kind in the United States and represents nearly 40 years of planning and hard work. Joining us to talk about how it has all come together and what is still to come are three guests who have devoted great amounts of energy and enthusiasm to that development. Valletta Forsyth-Lill is Executive Director of the Dallas Arts District. Anne Margolin is District 13 City Council Member and Chair of the Arts, Culture, and Library Committee. And Mike Rawlings is Mayor of Dallas. Welcome, all of you, to Think.
Thank you.
Thank you. Great to be here.
I just want to start with a little bit of the history. Valletta, maybe you can address this. How were plans first formulated to create a concentrated arts district in the northeast corner of downtown? And did that, to your knowledge, seem like an obvious choice at the time?
We have to go back to the 70s, about 1977, and the city hires Carr Lynch out of Boston, Massachusetts. And it really was the result of the Dallas Museum of Art sort of outgrowing its space at Fair Park. And museums are given to outgrowing their space. And so the city and the private sector hired a consultant to come down and take a look at if they were to move the DMA and other institutions out of Fair Park and from other places, where would it go? And the first choice, and really a very obvious choice, turned out to be downtown, and for a number of reasons. Number one, it was a time when Dallas wanted to, believe it or not, we were trying to begin to revitalize downtown. Some folks had moved out, and we wanted to make sure it remained vibrant. Besides it being a part of a revitalization effort, it was also easy access, so you could get there by highway and at grade streets. And then it had sort of a mix. You could create new buildings, and then it had this historic flavor in the form of its churches and Booker T. Washington High School, which was not Booker T. at that time. But it had that mix of historic buildings that they felt they could build new buildings with and make a nice, vibrant center. And then there was also vacant land. Mm-hmm. So land price, location, 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 and the desire to reinvigorate, if you will, or to ensure vigor in downtown were really kind of what led to that. From there, the city did a bond program in 1978 to kickstart, if you will, the Dallas Arts District and that vision, which was at that time to move the Opera, the Symphony, the Theater Center, and the museum. And the Dallas Children's Theater wanted to be down there, Dallas Black Dance, many of those institutions that are there today. But a bond program in 1978 to begin the Arts District fails. That happened to be right around the time of Proposition 13 in California, so there was sort of taxpayer revolt. The Trinity, I think it was the Trinity Town Lakes concept at that time was also on that bond. But it failed. The museum comes back in 1979 in a standalone proposition and successfully passes a bond, thus beginning the Arts District. Several years later, Sasaki Associates is hired out of Boston to come down and sort of design the look of the district if buildings were to come in. And that's the look that you see today, the rows of trees, the fine pavers, the light standards, the setbacks, and so forth were indeed designed back in the early 80s. So that vision comes from the 70s and the 80s.
So it sounds like from the beginning, people were made to understand that if it was going to work, there was going to need to be a great deal of private investment as well.
Yeah, it's amazing when I look back at first, how much has been spent down there? I mean, I think it's over $1 billion, right?
Yeah.
It's $1 billion. And recently, in the last 10, 12 years, in some of the toughest economic times that we've faced, I think the public has stepped up, and then the private sector has been amazing. We've set records all over the United States as far as the private giving in opening the ATT Performing Arts Center.
And when it was originally planned, if you look at those Sasaki plans from the early 80s, what you do see is actually more commercial development was dreamed. And it would have been a much more dense complex if it had gone according to the plan of kind of Carl Lynch and Sasaki. But over time, what was chosen and the direction was chosen is, and if you look at those buildings, really unique architecture and extraordinarily unique buildings, which have the ability to – they're great nests for great programming.
Mm-hmm. And programming is a big deal. I know that in addition to the individual venues having things planned all the time, street festivals have been a really robust part of this over the past couple of years. Talk about how decisions are made about who gets to have a street festival and who maybe is not exactly the sort of group that you would want down there.
Valetta, I think you're going to have to talk about
that. Are you the arbiter of the festival?
I am indeed the arbiter of the festival. And really what we want to do in creating festivals is to break down barriers. It's to invite the public into into our living room, as it were, and hope that they will also – we mix it up with the arts programming. It's not a disconnect from the building. It's an enhancement to mm-hmm. the buildings. What goes on in the buildings is also brought to the streets and then enhanced. You may have local artists doing something like Aurora and working with us. Over this weekend, we had Dance Africa Festival. We had Art in Motion Parade where people decorated their bikes and paraded down the street. Fiesta Latino Americana. So bringing in folks that it needs to be diverse. It needs to be reflective of the buildings around it, that it is indeed artistic.
One of the things that I'd like to add is that it's always been the vision of the city council and the city to have a vibrant street life in the arts district. So in addition to the festivals, we have just been trying to encourage the venues there and to be helpful as much as possible in finding ways to bring people there during the week, during the lunch hour, before and after performances. The goal is ultimately to have the Arts District not be simply a place that people show up, go to a performance, and go home. And one of the more exciting things that's happened over the past year or so has been the advent of the food trucks in the arts district, and I know Valletta worked very, very hard to get that with city staff, and it's finally taken shape, and it's really, really having a great impact on foot traffic and street life in the arts district.
So did you want to add to that?
I just want to add one thing, and that is the city, indeed, even as part of its transportation and encouraging pedestrian development, as part of its Complete Streets program, and you're going to be voting on that with the bond program, labels that street as a festival street. So it's even incorporated into its transportation policy mm-hmm. and its urban planning policy, seeing it as a place of festivals and life.
Mm-hmm. So I have to say that I have a good friend who's thinking about moving to Dallas and wrote me an email and said, well, what can you tell me about the city? And the first thing I said was talking about all the arts development, and he was astonished. Now, he lives in Austin. Have we done a good enough job? What more will it take to – we know in North Texas that we have all this, and we have a great arts culture in Fort Worth as well. Why aren't other people aware of this yet?
Well, I do think it's a you know, one of the best kept secrets. This last year, we had an art fair last spring. We flew in a lot of art critics and people that knew the art world all over the place. They were blown away about what Dallas had. So a lot of this is just trying the product, if you will. You've got to understand, it was a fascinating dinner I had once with Santiago Calatrava, who designed the bridge, and we were talking about great cities and great art cities, and I was a little defensive, and we were talking about Paris, and I said, but Mr. Calatrava, we're only 156 years old, And he says, that's the great news. We're not just doing this for your friend, which I love. Bring him down here. Mm-hmm. But we're doing this for the next century.
Yeah.
And when we're building something that I think is truly going to be remarkable. We've got the buildings. Now we need to operate them better. And eventually, we're going to be able to make the art here. I mean, we're a much better place for artists to make art in Dallas than Austin. People have come up because it doesn't have the support. Austin is seen as kind of more artistic, but we've got the infrastructure, and ultimately, I think we can compete with anybody in the country, given the time we need.
Also, the Dallas Convention and Visitors Bureau just created something called a TPID, without getting into the details, a public improvement district, which is a way that the larger hotels can assess themselves a fee for marketing. And a portion of that fee is going to go to cultural tourism. I sit on the board of the Convention and Visitors Bureau and co-chair with Max Anderson of the DMA, a committee on cultural tourism. And we're working toward, with a great committee, how to promote Dallas as a cultural tourism destination. So that is something that really hasn't even taken form yet, because we're just in the planning stages. But there's going to be a great marketing effort to bring people into Dallas for cultural tourism.
A lot of people don't even know that Maestro Yap, or DSO, won the Conductor of the Year for the whole world right here in Dallas. And so when these things happen, we've got to make a bigger deal about them. And that's why we thank KERA every time they talk about the arts, because it's important for the city.
Well, we're happy to be here doing that. Does cultural tourism come at the expense of our great reputation as a city for sports and shopping, or does this bring in an entirely different audience of people to the region?
Well, the goal is to bring in an entirely different audience of people. We're working with the hotels, because they obviously have an interest in it, as well as cultural leaders throughout Dallas, because they want to sell tickets. I mean, this is very economically oriented, because the people who are involved in this have an economic interest in seeing people come to Dallas for tourism. So it's a great potential boost to the city in a lot of ways.
And you see that cross-pollination, for example, in Cowboy Stadium, which is actually also an arts venue. Mm-hmm. If you look at, for example, last year, we had Dallas Opera performing there, Magic Flute. If you look at the artworks that Gene Jones select along with a committee for the stadium, it's actually another arts venue, if you will. I mean, if you want to come and see art, that I would suggest you stop there too. So it's really a cross-pollination of people. It's not at the expense of sports. It's an addition to. Mm-hmm. Please come and see. We've got four great sports teams in this area, but also come and see museums and theater. And, you know, on the committee that Ann and Max are chairing, we have a wide array of folks from the arts scene there. And it's not only folks from the Arts District, but it's Edwin Cabanis from the Kessler Theater and
Michael Meadows from the Zoo.
From the Zoo and so forth, so that we have, so people sort of understand the comprehensive picture.
And believe it or not, you can like the Cowboys and Wagner at the same time.
Exactly.
Absolutely. In fact, you can hear some Wagner while they're running down the field. We're speaking this hour with Mike Rawlings, who is mayor of Dallas, Valletta Forsyth-Lill, executive director of the Dallas Arts District, and Ann Margolin, District 13 city council member and chair of the Arts, Culture, and Library Committee. We'd love to have your input and your questions on all of this. The number is 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education, presenting Secrets from the White House Kitchen, lecture, book signing, and hors d'oeuvres, October 16th with Chef John Hanney III. More at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're talking about arts development in Dallas this afternoon with Ann Margolin, who is District 13 City Council member and chair of the Arts, Culture, and Library Committee. Valetta Forsyth-Lill is with us as well. She's executive director of the Dallas Arts District. And Mike Rawlings is with us, mayor of Dallas. He and I will be actually on Wednesday at the Dallas City Performance Hall for the first annual Reading Partners Celebrity Spelling Bee. And I understand that you and I are going to be competing head-to-head.
The odds are with you.
I don't know. We'll see about that. But, you know, I have not been...
I've already checked the bookies out. You've got it.
I have not been inside the performance hall yet. Watched it go up months and months.
But. It's you know, it's a public building. We couldn't have all the detail that sometimes the private funding building would have. So you were a little fearful that is this thing going to be a public building? It is gorgeous. It is very clean. Great acoustics. It does Dallas proud for all our smaller arts organizations.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk about, so you talked about, you know, the funding for a city planned building is going to be somewhat less than something that was funded privately. What's the role of business organizations in keeping the arts vibrant in Dallas?
Well, frankly, it has not been enough lately. We've got some great big corporations. AT&T has stepped up in a major way with the Performing Arts Center. Exxon has done some things from time to time. And part of car dealerships will do it. But when you look at how much giving is done in Dallas, it's the citizens and it's philanthropists. We have some great philanthropists. We had 120 families give $1 million a year. $1 million for the AT&T Performing Arts Center. But if you look at it, only, I think, 6% of the – or less than 10% of the giving was through businesses. If you look at cities across the United States, that's not the case. Businesses get involved with the arts. And so that's why Ann came up with the idea of creating the Mayor's Business Arts Initiative, where we're challenging businesses to get involved. Adopt an arts organization. We've got a simple way. For $2,500, you can book an event at the City Performance Hall for an arts organization. And that's a huge thing. That makes them a lot of money. It's a great night. And it brings that diversity and the foot traffic in that Valetta was talking about. So this is an extremely important part of Dallas growing up to being that city we want to be in the next coming decades.
And what do you think accounts for, until now, businesses not being as involved with the arts in Dallas as they might be in other cities?
Honestly, I couldn't say. I think that the wealthy individuals and foundations have just taken the load, and that's what's happened. And so we don't have a history of giving by businesses. But through the Mayor's Business Arts Initiative, what we're asking businesses to do is to consider, in essence, adopting an arts organization, to taking one on, whether it's a small one, a large one, something that fits their business, that fits their employee profile, in which they could perhaps serve on a board, get involved, get their employees involved, because we're not just trying to raise money. We're trying to raise support. We're trying to raise awareness. We're trying to build audiences. We're trying to just increase involvement all around. And so we've had a couple of events so far that have been very well attended, and we have had some successes, and we've had two donations of $2,500 to support organizations who will be at the City Performance Hall. So it's just getting up and going, but it's moving along nicely.
And it's all that, you know, we've talked over the years about the creative class and Richard Florida's theories and so forth. And so it's not just feel good for corporations. It's really an investment for their future. It's to create – it's having that creativity in the area that brings an educated workforce, that creates an interest in investing in the area. We're seeing more and more office tenants, everything from law firms to smaller firms who want to get closer to the arts district so they have a place to sort of entertain themselves. Mm-hmm. It's not just bringing in their clients. It's going out in the evening and maybe seeing a play or just hanging out and listening to music outside. So it's really an investment for these corporations to as part of the whole creative class thing.
It's very easy to when you're doing a budget meeting, to say, well, we need to cut costs. We're not going to give to the arts. It's tougher, though, when that same board needs to hire a great chief marketing officer mm-hmm. or CFO from someplace, from Seattle. And they want to come to a place that's creative. People are coming to Dallas because they see us at that cusp. And the faster we get it there, the more talent we're going to be able to have in this city. So there's no question it's an investment that's going to come back to those shareholders.
Does business investment in the art, though, come with no strings attached? Or are there concerns about what might offend? What, you know, Dr. Pepper doesn't want their name associated with this production or that exhibition?
I think you've got to match for what's right for that business. Mm-hmm. I don't sense a lot of offensive sort of thing. But it is – Ann spoke about it. What does your employee base – what are they going to get excited about? Is it the theater? Is it the opera? Is it the Dallas Black Dance Theater, who's fabulous? We've got some world-class organizations that just if one organization would grab a hold of them would take them to the next level. So I think it's more of a matchmaking process, and that's what we're trying to do.
And I think strings attached, really. We have not seen or anything that I'm aware of where a company says, no, I can't be associated with that particular art form. The strings come in the form of we're providing X amount of dollars, and in return, it is a way for them to get their name out. So it's truly that association becomes a marketing tool for them. So we haven't seen so much of a corporation saying, I don't want to be associated with this particular performance or art form, but they do want to ensure that they're getting their name out as a result of supporting those art forms.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the phone first to Janelle in Dallas. Hi, Janelle.
Yes, hi. I had a question. I know y'all were talking earlier about the festivals being in the Dallas Arts District, and I was wondering specifically about the Earth Day Festival that got moved from I think the Dallas or the AT&T Plaza to the Dallas Arts District back to Fair Park. What was the decision-making process in that? And the change from the different venues, was that because of outgrowing the space or the fact that it got moved to Fair Park? Was that, I guess, and this is the second part of the question, is there going to be any kind of investment back towards Fair Park area, since I know the DMA and others moved away from Fair Park?
I can answer the first part, and I'll look to the mayor to talk a little bit about Fair Park. We loved having the Earth Day Festival down in the Arts District. The only challenge that we faced in bringing big festivals down to the Arts District is our buildings are programmed. So we can do festivals in the street, but if there need to be lectures in our halls and so forth, in many cases, those are already booked. So we found ourselves with a case where they may have wanted to do a lecture in the Winspear Opera House, and indeed the Winspear was booked for Broadway or whatever it was. So it really was an issue of sort of conflicting program internal to the buildings that we had. And some of that can be worked out over long periods of time when you've got several years, because indeed a symphony and an opera are programming. Right now they're looking at 15 in terms of their program.
2015.
And the same thing with museums. They're looking several years out for their exhibitions. So if you can plan several years out, if you need a lot of interior spaces, then you can kind of work around that. In the case of Earth Day, they want it on Earth Day and close to that time, so it's not a real flexible time. So it really was a little bit of timing. Hopefully, they'll be able to come back to us because we love having them. We thought it was a great synergy for us, but it really is the timing of who can book the halls at a specific time.
Yeah, Earth Day specifically has been very successful now at Fair Park. It's very big, and so I think we were excited about seeing it at Fair Park. The renaissance of Fair Park is a multi-year process, much like the building of the Arts District has been. You citizens have invested a lot, hundreds of millions of dollars in Fair Park over the last a decade or so. And we just recently decided to spend $30 million more in the Cotton Bowl, which has gotten some returns. We've been able to book some more venues. One of the things that we're getting are more unique products in Fair Park. We just talked about the Earth Day. The Chinese Lantern Festival is there. It's over-the-top cultural experience for people. And I think they find the Fair Park is very just fits perfectly with some of those unique things. We're going to continue to lay out how we take Fair Park to the next level, because it's also one of the great public spaces in America and gets rated that. So I'm excited about the future of the Fair Park as well.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next on the phones to Cody in Dallas. Hi, Cody.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Two things. Y'all need to put a deal on Pandora or iHeartRadio so I can listen to y'all at work on my phone. And second, I heard y'all talking earlier about the food trucks. And when do those show up in the art district?
Cody, we're glad that you enjoy our food trucks. If you go to our website, thedallasartsdistrict.org, there's a little icon that is on the homepage, and you click the little food truck, and it will give you who's there at what time. Typically, they are there Monday through Friday at lunch. They're there for all special occasions and late nights and those kinds of things. For Saturdays, they're whenever we feel that we've got enough critical mass of people walking around or going to dine. So then we also program with the food trucks. So on Wednesday of this week, you can come down and hear an opera concert along with dining from a food truck. So just check out the website, thedallasartsdistrict.org, and if you click on the food truck icon, it will tell you exactly what time and who is there.
The grilled cheese sandwiches are what I like.
Yeah, Wednesday, Friday, yeah, Mayor.
Very good.
Wednesday, Friday at lunch.
And as for listening on your phone, Cody, we do have apps available, live streaming apps for iPhone and Android, I believe, at this point. So just keep that in mind. Was there a great amount of consternation among the restaurants in the area about the arrival of the food trucks?
There probably was a little bit of consternation. I will say we are looking to having more restaurants, and that was one of the reasons that I wanted to change the law to allow for food trucks, was that it created many more opportunities for people to dine. But at the same time, folks who want to go to a restaurant for a specific cuisine are going to go to that restaurant, and people who want to go and sit outside and eat lunch. It just creates a larger number of places for you to dine, and we just want people to have dining opportunities.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. We have an email address as well. That's think@kera.org. Paul in Terrell says the McKinney Avenue trolley is one of the best features of the district. He also wants to know, and Mayor, I guess I'll address this to you, who will win the Nasher versus Tower death cage match? That's Paul's words from Terrell. I'm sure you won't answer that exactly, but
I'll answer
what
it.
Can you tell us about the status?
I think Dallas will win.
Dallas will win. But what can you tell us about the status of the negotiations?
Well, there's no negotiations, okay? I think this whole notion that it's either or is exactly the wrong approach to this thing. We've got to have the Nasher, as beautiful as it ever has been, and it is one of the true gems throughout America, and it will succeed. At the same time, we've got a beautiful new building, and it's got to succeed as well. So the key is the genius of the and here. Both groups have been looking at several options, and they are getting down to the finalists of those options that are going, and they both agree that unless everybody's happy, that we're not going to move ahead. So we've got to get that solved. And I think hopefully in the next a month or two, we will bring that to resolution. Because that's and you know what I think it's fascinating. It's not just in the Arts District. Valletta lives in the Arts District, but it's throughout this whole city. We're growing. And when that happens, things happen to neighbors. And you have to work them out, whether it's the Bishop Arts District or whether it's White Rock Lake or whether it's in the Arts District. How do you bring growth and both of them win? And that's what we're in the process of doing.
I'm going to do a little bit of a commercial for the McKinney Avenue trolley. I appreciate that the listener brought that up. It is in an expansion phase right now. So if you're driving in the Arts District, and I came through I came on Olive when I came to the station, which is always very exciting because right now we're down to one lane coming out of downtown on Olive. Because, but the good news is it's for several great projects. The park coming online October 27th and 28th, and the McKinney Avenue trolley is expanding so that you will be able to connect to the DART station. And that construction should be through toward the end of this year, beginning of next year. And then there's an expansion that the city received a $5 million federal grant for. So it's a total of $10 million to expand it from where it stops now at St. Paul and Ross. And it'll go up almost to the DART line at Federal, come over on Federal, link up to what's being constructed now on Olive, and then take you back into Uptown. So you'll be able to get on the McKinney Avenue trolley, which is seeing a big rise in its ridership right now. It's about 30% a year, if I remember right. And we'll see an even greater, I think, when we have that expansion. So it's a way for people to be able to come to the district who don't want to drive and park. They may be coming for, they can come in on DART, which is, we have a new station that's named Pearl Arts District Station. And then you'll be able to get on the trolley as well. So it's just access.
We're talking about arts development in Dallas this hour with Valletta Forsyth-Lill, who's executive director of the Dallas Arts District, and Margolin, District 13 City Council member and chair of the Arts, Culture, and Library Committee, and Mayor of Dallas, Mike Rawlings. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education, presenting Secrets from the White House Kitchen, lecture, book signing, and hors d'oeuvres October 16th with Chef John Hanney III. More at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Dallas Mayor Mike Rawlings is with us this hour as we talk about the Dallas Arts District and arts development throughout the city. Anne Margolin is here as well. She chairs the Arts, Culture, and Library Committee for the Dallas City Council. And Valletta Forsyth-Lill is executive director of the Dallas Arts District through the end of the month. And I will say we're all going to miss you. I know you've,
thank you, Chris.
You've done an unbelievable, like, three decades worth of work in 3 or 4 years. The remarkable thing is thinking about who will come in to fill your shoes. Just briefly, what qualities will your successor need?
A love and passion for that neighborhood. And I walk it all the time, and I think of it in exactly the same way I think about the neighborhood where I live. I look at every cracked paver or every irrigation system that may not work or whatever. But it is the ability to keep folks working together. So may require a few mediation skills. But really, it's I do a lot of convening. Mm-hmm. And in it ensuring that we bring everybody together in the district because we are a neighborhood. So it's kind of if you have the skills to be the neighborhood association president, you need the ability to be a marketer because we're really marketing. I say we have a small budget but a $1 billion brand, mm-hmm. and it truly is a $1 billion brand that you're doing it. The ability to work with City Hall. When this position was envisioned, many, many years ago, back when in those 70s and 80s plans that we were talking about earlier, they dreamed that the original position was a volunteer position. It was the arts district coordinator that reported to the mayor, actually. And then out in 2000, in 2009, it became a full-time position and separate from City Hall, but it's really a passion for the arts, a passion for the neighborhood, a passion for urban planning, for marketing, and really to see the vision long term. What is this neighborhood going to be? Because I frequently say we're 30 years into a 50-year plan.
It is sort of remarkable that someone who's been in public life as long as you have, you appear to have no enemies. Like calling around, looking around, there seems to be no one who doesn't say, "Oh, Valletta Lil is amazing."
It's wanting to listen to people, mm-hmm. and giving folks a voice. But now that we're on the radio and you say that, I'm sure somebody will fall in and go, "I'm her sworn enemy." No, I'm kidding. But it really is. I act on my passions probably, and I think it's always good to listen to folks, even if you don't agree. And you know, sometimes we have those discussions in the arts district where we don't all agree, but that's an important discussion to have nonetheless.
Let me just say briefly that those of us on the city council, and I think I speak for everyone, will really, really miss you, Valletta. You have done a phenomenal job. You've always kept the city council apprised of what you're doing. You've come to us when you needed us and have always been phenomenal to work with. And so we appreciate you a lot, and we're going to miss you.
Well, I appreciate those who are sitting there today, those who are my successors. And what is amazing in the Arts District is, although this vision is 30 years old and more, it's how councils, city managers, and mayors have maintained their eye on that ball for all these years and stuck with that vision. And sometimes Dallas gets a bad rap in saying, "Oh, we go to the next thing." And in this and many other cases, we've stuck with that vision, and that's exciting. So thank you. It's been a great opportunity to serve.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We have Therese on the line now in Dallas. Hi, Therese.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I just have a question for you. You know, I've been down to Austin a number of times for the annual book festival that they have there, and it's such a great event, both for the city and for the people who attend. And I was wondering why Dallas doesn't have an annual book festival or how they would go about trying to plan an annual book festival.
Actually, we have two. One is called Book Smart Festival, which is at the Dallas Museum of Art. And if I remember my dates this year, it was mid-June of this year where they bring in authors and so forth. And it is growing because and it was really an offshoot of Arts and Letters Live, which has been around 20-some years, probably 25 years. So we do have it's called Book Smart Festival, and if you go to the Dallas Museum of Art's website and use their search engine for Book Smart, you will find it. And it has continued. It's I think 3 years old now and growing. So we encourage folks to do that. In South Dallas, Tulasima, am I saying that right?
Tulasima, I think.
Down at the South Dallas Cultural Center. So, Mayor, that's another – it's a smaller event, but certainly an important one.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Email address is think@kera.org. We have a letter here from Lorraine who says, the critics who wrote about the Dallas Art Fair mentioned a shocking lack of local artists at the events. I would argue Dallas is not supportive of local artists. One problem is the social aspects of events that are either highly exclusive or those which are highly inclusive, like street events. Can we expect forums involving local artists centered on intellectualism in the near future?
Well, I agree. I agree exactly with that. I think that we're getting there, but as a new city, we are looking outside for the artist and bringing them in. There is a growing amount of very talented artists here. I think what we don't have is the media attention that we need. We used to have an arts critic, a visual arts critic, at the Dallas Morning News, and that job went away. And so as we get more virtual, we have to figure out how to bring the light on those folks and then also make it easy to do artwork here. We've got places, but it's a little spread out right now. So that's a strategic issue we've got to deal with.
And I think some of those discussions came out, it's probably almost 2 years ago, on the blog Glass Tire talked about what does Dallas need to be a great art city, and you know, no recognition of the fact that we have great facilities and that we're doing, quite frankly, a lot of great art in a lot of different formats, but still it's that support of visual artists, I will say. I think when some of the surveys have occurred, people seem to think that we support performing arts a little, our local artists a little more than we do our visual artists. And some of that may come from the city has given funding to art forms like theater and so forth, and it's a little harder to give funding to individual artists.
Well, you know, one of the things that we're working on now is finding a way to do artist housing in the city. And that's really, it's a process that's just beginning, but ultimately we're going to be able to use some of the tax credits that are normally available for low-income housing as a way to support artist housing. And there's a group called Art Space.
Which is low-income, too.
Which is low-income. It is low-income. That's why we can use the tax credits. Art Space, which is based in Minneapolis, does this all over the country, and they were here for about 2 weeks ago, and I participated in some of their little seminars and tours. And so we're just beginning that process, but I would say probably 2 to 3 years from now, we should have some city-supported artist housing.
What does it take to stop thinking of local artists as local artists? You don't go to Paris and have people say, I just bought this painting by a local artist. And you don't go to New York and people see a Broadway show and say, I saw some wonderful local artists performing on stage. Is it like a confidence thing that we have to get to the point that we recognize that we have people here of a really high caliber?
Well, first of all, I think the art's got to speak for itself. Mm-hmm. I mean, it shouldn't be local or non-local.
Right.
It should be great art. And when that happens, it happens to be a local artist that did it. So, and I think that's why the criticism world is critical for that. I think the galleries have got to step up. We've got a tremendous financial base, and our gallery business is starting to grow. I mean, it really is. And then I think ultimately we've got to be a cool place to live. And that's what Ann's talking about, and that's why we need those. But what's happening right now is people are graduating from art schools back east, and they can't afford to live there. So we need to be attracting them, and they can sell their work here, and musicians and other performing artists as well. And ultimately, that's the third act that we need to get to, and we're going to. But we've got a lot of momentum, and I think the question is dead on.
Is there support available from the city for small, galleries and performing arts venues, things that are privately funded, that are private businesses, or is that something that the city really has no business sort of getting involved directly in the operation of for-profit businesses that would give smaller scale artists a place to do their work?
The city has not been involved in supporting for-profit businesses. The city is deeply involved in contracting with nonprofit organizations of many, many sizes. And it's interesting because I think you have to note the word contract as opposed to the word donation. When we work through our Cultural Affairs Commission on allocating what is now about $3 million, we go through a series of panels, and in the end, we're doing things like, for example, let's say there's a small dance company that we support. We're not giving them $25,000 because they exist. We're giving them $25,000 because they're going to provide lessons to 2,000 kids after school at certain schools. Similarly with theater organizations or art, various visual arts organizations. But in answer to your question, I would have a hard time justifying support for for-profit organizations at this point unless a really good case could be made.
One last thing I want to add to this part of the discussion is this is where the universities need to help us. UTD is doing some programs that are very good, SMU, UTA, UNT. We need higher education to help create this momentum that we're talking about to be able to attract these students in or these artists in and create a culture that I think we all want.
Okay, briefly, I want to ask each of you your visions for, let's say, 30 years from now, when the Dallas Arts District is not something new, but it has been established for some time. How will it be different than it is today? Anne, we'll start with you.
Well, my vision for it is, I almost want to say a 24-hour venue. Mm-hmm. I want to see people there all the time. I want to see restaurants thriving. I want to see constant performances of all different kinds and small groups, large groups performing, the visual arts organizations just thriving, and so much energy that the entire area around the Arts District is really a continuation of the Arts District, and it's just a very cool, exciting place to live and to be all the time.
Valetta?
Well, I say that my successor will be responsible for three things, and that is coffee, food, and alcohol, because those are the three things that we need next in that form of commercial development and retail development and so forth. But I also think expect the unexpected, that you could always come down and something unexpected might be happening, something that would be a sort of surprise to you.
So it's a destination with or without an event.
Exactly. It's mm-hmm. a destination with or without an event, and I call it lingering. Mm-hmm. The you can go and just hang out, and we are just starting to see that. People who literally come down and the kids run through the reflecting pool, the donor pool at the AT&T Performing Arts Center, or they just sit out in front of the Crow Collection and maybe have a cup of coffee. And it's that energy. It is that just unharnessed energy that I want to see in the district.
Mayor, last 15 seconds goes to you.
Well, first of all, development from downtown, so more people living. Second, programming. The premieres like Moby Dick and what we're doing at Dallas Theater Center, we need to have more and more of those. And lastly, how we operate will be fundamentally different, I think. The backroom services, how we utilize the wisdom and the talent of everybody as we pull together the whole Arts District together.
Mike Rawlings is mayor of Dallas and will be participating in the Reading Partners Celebrity Spelling Bee this Wednesday, October 10th at the Dallas City Performance Hall. Anne Margolin is District 13 council member and chair of the Arts, Culture, and Library Committee. Valetta Forsythe-Lill is executive director of the Dallas Arts District. Wonderful to have you all here. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Chris.
Today's show was engineered by Justin Martin. Joe Bellotti answers the phones. Christine McConnell produces the podcast. Jeff Whittington is senior producer. You can find out about upcoming programs at KERA.org/think. Email comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.